It's a tagless world. The default radio channel in my car is National Public Radio, but I also toggle to my guilty pleasure, sports talk radio. Who are the Chicago Bears eyeing in the draft? Can our beloved Blackhawks repeat as Stanley Cup champions? The ads come fast and furious. Ads for ticket brokers, remedies for low T, hair restoration, male diapers for dribblers. I'm reminded of the fishing term bycatch, referring to the inevitable harvest of undesirable fish in creels or trawling nets. That's what I am to these advertisers, nothing more than a scrap of disposable bycatch. I don't take offense. In fact, the male dominance just makes it easier to tamp the ads down to deep background. But occasionally there's leakage in my defense. One ad has just snagged my full attention, an ad for the new tagless line of Hanes t-shirts. The implications of taglessness almost forced me off the road. Really, can tags be that annoying? And if so, are Americans so lazy that they can't just snip them out? Perhaps as a group we are intimidated by the tags on mattresses and pillows that warn us that their removal is a heinous crime, punishable by law. Can a whole ad campaign be built around such a trivial problem? When I got home, I discovered that there is a federally mandated care labeling rule that requires manufacturers and importers to attach care instructions on all garments. Apparently, the feds think that Americans have the inalienable right to know whether they need to wash or dry clean their dirties. This closed captioning has traditionally involved a tag sewn into the collar or waistband. The radio ads want me to believe that these tags are a supremely annoying situation. After all, a flapping tag could irritate my next nape, or the tag could become visible to all. I don't see this as a problem, since I can self-correct, or rely on friends who might give me a knowing nod. But the implication from the ads is that a visible tag is a real social faux pas. The Hanes ad was just not an isolated radio spot, but taglessness was a full-on multimedia campaign, including an event in Times Square where celebrities such as Mr. T witnessed the unveiling of the new t-shirt. There were TV ads that showed embarrassing moments involving exposed tags. One suburbanite muffed his hamburgers on the grill when he simultaneously tried to tuck in his tag. Other commercials featured talking tags, all peppy and excited to see the light of day, until Michael Jordan comes by and rips them out. The commercials end with anguished cries as the tags go through a shredder. The concept of taglessness was now fully ensconced in my consciousness. I thought there must be a bigger story behind this ad campaign, of nationwide focus groups probing the intersection of tags and annoyance, of harried advertising executives in a desperate search for any little thing that could provide a competitive edge for their t-shirts. Scene. A conference room in the plush offices of Hanes Underwear. Seated around the table are Nick Dimes, product manager, t-shirt division, Penelope Pincher, head of consumer research, and Mahula Muchmore, head of product research. On either side of Nick sits a young intern and an older gentleman. Everyone is dressed casually except the older man, who wears a tweed jacket with leather patches on the sleeves. "All right, group, let's get started," says Nick. "I'm sure you saw the numbers I circulated earlier. I've been working at Hanes for my entire life, and I have never seen anything like this. We're getting clobbered by the big box stores. For decades, our t-shirts have meant quality, durability, and fit. But Costco has now reduced them to nothing more than a commodity. Okay, team, we have to find a way to get our identity back." Nick pauses as his voice catches, and the rest of the room shifts uncomfortably in their seats. "Before we really dig into this, I want to introduce two important guests," says Nick. "This young man to my right is a summer intern and a real marketing genius in the making. Saw his potential years ago. It was a hot Sunday, and we were all sweating up a storm in church as the minister just nattered on. We burst out of there at the last blessing, and the first thing we saw was this little kid's lemonade stand. I still remember the ice cubes bobbing in the pitcher and water droplets running down the side. What a relief." Nick continues speaking as he gives the intern a playful cuff on the head. "I sure learned a thing or two about product placement that day. A hard worker, too, working both the 9 and 11 o'clock services. Group, I'd like you to meet Billy Buck." "Thanks, Uncle Nick, Nick," said Billy. "And I can't tell you how honored I am to introduce this gentleman on my left," says Nick. "A legend in our field. What he did for straws and the upside-down ketchup bottle have become marketing case studies. Ladies and gentlemen, give Chuck Pease a warm Hanes welcome." As the smattering of applause dies down, Nick continues, Chuck, I could hear your story about straws again and again, so please give this group a rundown. It's an important lesson for our dire situation. Glad to be here. Pleased to help. As he speaks, Chuck has a disconcerting habit of pulling on the tufts of hair sprouting from his ears. Yes, I've made my career out of turning commodities into branded products. It all started with straws in the 1940s. Back then, straws were nothing more than hollow tubes, probably unchanged since Ooga Magook sat in his cave and sucked on a reed. So I happened to be lying in my backyard hammock with an iced tea, but every time I wanted to take a sip, I had to lift my head because the straw was stiff and stuck straight out of the glass. If I didn't aim the straw just right, the tea dripped on my shirt. An annoyance, right? I thought there must be a better way. I'm an American, and Americans shouldn't have to put up with annoyances. Then came my aha moment. Chuck paused for dramatic effect and continued. I noticed the wind bending the grass, and I realized that if I could make the straw bend at a right angle, my problem would be solved. Got some engineers involved, did a little research on angles and pliability, and we put the crinkle right where it counted. We made a fortune on those straws until the patent ran out. I know that straw changed a lot of lives, says Nick. Now we need to find a crinkle for our t-shirt. Chuck, just sit here and soak it all in. Jump in any time with your insights. Okay, group, let's go around the room. Mahula, give us an update on research. Any news from the armpit lab? Nick, I know you've championed t-shirts that resisted yellow armpits, says Mahula. I agree, this could be our difference maker, set us apart from our competitors. But I'm afraid it just hasn't been as easy as a crinkle in a straw. We've researched this for years, and the problem is that we've never been able to understand why the armpits turn yellow in the first place. So we really haven't made any headway on a solution. Nick, I'm sorry, but with the last budget cuts, we just had to transfer the armpitters to the sock division. They're having better luck with odor control. Nick is wide-eyed, mouth agape. Mahula nods to Penelope, looking for support. Nick, I'm sorry, says Penelope. I know you're disappointed, but consumer research supported this reorg. We did a whole series of focus groups with women. It's the guys that buy the t-shirts, you see, but it's the women who do the laundry. And when they see the yellow armpit, they just throw the t-shirt out and tell the guy to go buy more. And he usually just buys the same brand. We can say that our t-shirts are durable, but the bottom line is that repeat purchases are driven by yellow armpits. The truth is, we need people to throw away their t-shirts, and that's what women do. No upside for us to keep the pits white. Sorry, Nick. The reorg came from the top, says Mahula. Unless we can free up some money from the sock lab, underwear research is at a standstill. We're going to have to find a crinkle in the product as is. Here, I brought a stack of t-shirts to pass around for brainstorming. Nick remains wide-eyed and his shoulders slump. Billy Buck's mouth is now also hanging open as he realizes the glittering career in marketing promised by his uncle could be reduced to the prosaic conundrum of yellow armpits. Mahula plops a box of shirts on the table and passes them out by sliding them across to each team member. Chuck seems to have dozed off, and the t-shirt slides right by him and onto the floor. Billy Buck leans down to pick it up and purposely nudges Chuck awake in the process. The group idly looks at the familiar t-shirts, rubbing, stretching, and smelling the fabric. Nick had regained his bearings and sat up in his chair. Well, in my 30 years at Hanes, I've learned not to argue with the C-suite. I've also learned that my team always knows how to pull together and make do. Okay, let's brainstorm. Any ideas out there? Remember our pride in our product. We are Hanes Strong. Can't we say that this is some sort of fancy cotton hand-picked by beautiful Nubian women along the Nile? Says a voice from the back of the room. I know my wife insists on high thread count Egyptian cotton for our sheets. Nick looks down the table with a weary expression on his face. Thanks for the idea, but we tried that in the 1980s with the silky smooth line that we put in high-end stores. Men buy the t-shirts, remember, and they just don't shop at high-end stores. Beautiful Nubian women are just not part of the Hanes durable and tough image. I championed silky smooth and we got destroyed. Sent my career back a good 5 years. Any others? An awkward silence fills the room. Nick looks at Chuck expectantly, but he's absently staring at the ceiling, still pulling on his ear tuft. Billy startles as he feels a hand upon his knee, looks down and notices that Chuck is passing him a note. He discreetly reads it. What happened to the tags? Billy asks with a nervous quaver in his voice. I don't see them anymore. There's just this little printing on the fabric here. Hard to read, but it looks like it has the same information that used to be on the tags.
Oh, that, says Mahula. That's just our new heat treatment labeling. Don't have to pay to sew the label in. Now we use a machine that stamps the info right onto the cotton. We save a few pennies a shirt, but it adds up. It's a big deal to our bottom line. A couple of people down there in product development got nice bonuses out of that one.
Billy sees Chuck give him a slight go-ahead nod.
Can't we use this as our marketing campaign, says Billy? Are we the only company with a tagless t-shirt?
Nick turns towards Billy and shakes his head slightly, trying to get him to shut up. I appreciate the thought, Billy, but what do tags have to do with anything? How can you build a campaign around a tag, for God's sake?
Chuck startles everyone by slowly standing up and moving to the lectern at the head of the table. He stares intently at the group and speaks with authority.
Give him a chance. Billy has a great idea. Find a way to make the tags annoying. Billy, here's my piece of advice. Remember it, and you'll go places in this world. In this great country of America, you can always market against annoyance. I told you about the straw, but how annoying is it to spank a ketchup bottle? How about sitting on those cold car seats? Annoying, right? That's why they put those heaters in there. Make tags annoying. Need I say more? I don't think so. My job here is done.
He pats Billy on the back as he leaves the room. Nick is now beaming at his nephew.
I told you this kid would be a marketing genius. Let's have a big go tagless party to kick it off. Maybe in Times Square in New York, get some celebrity spokespeople. Have a countdown, just like New Year's. 5, 4, 3, 2, 1, and then boom, we reveal the t-shirt. Huge, several stories high.
Oh, here's an idea for TV, says Billy. We could come up with a bunch of embarrassing scenarios, like someone at a bar trying to pick up a girl. She's interested, and then boom, she sees the tag and is instantly turned off.
Wait, even better, the nerdy guy is sitting at the bar next to Michael Jordan, and as the girl walks away, Jordan leans over and whispers in his ear, "I went tagless, my friend, and it has made all the difference."